kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up with a little preview to start things off. Joining me to begin the show, Royal Sefton. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are things? It's been a while since we've had you on.
Yeah, going pretty well. I haven't had a lot of game time. I went to Disneyland, so I'm back and I'm ready to get back into some gaming.
Oh my God, I should use that Splash Mountain picture as the episode picture.
I was advertising for SML Podcast, yes.
That was awesome that you showed it. Do I have your permission for that?
Yeah, you do. But I thought I sent you the Incredicoaster one. I also have a Splash Mountain.
Oh, it was the Incredicoaster.
But I do have one for Splash Mountain, too, so I'll send that to you as well.
Sweet. Yeah. I'll just double it up, use them both. Yeah, it's the Incredicoaster. Awesome. I'm getting them mixed up. There's too many roller coasters with pictures that you get to take.
Yep, and with that shirt on, too.
And I'm too fat for all of them. Yeah.
Oh.
Aside from that, how's things been? How are you doing?
You know, doing pretty well. And it's been definitely a monsoon season here. Like, Arizona's just getting torn apart with windstorms and thunder and rain.
Ooh.
So, yeah. No, it's actually kind of pleasant because we don't get bad weather here very often. So when we do get bad weather, it's like an event. But then with a bunch of yard work to do afterwards, so it's not all good, I suppose.
Hooray, I saw a tornado.
Nothing that extreme, but I've lost a screen, a couple roof tiles, and a lot of tree limbs. So.
Hooray, yeah. We lost roof tiles. It's an event.
That's right. We will rebuild.
Oh, man. You know what else is an event?
Mm.
A closed beta for a game.
Yes.
How's that for a segue?
Oh.
I'm busting these motherfuckers out.
Whee!
Yeah, might as well dive into the games that you're here to talk about, huh?
Yeah, hurt me. Let's do this.
First game that we're here to talk about tonight is a preview for the game Override Mech City Brawl, developed by The Balance, published by Modus Games. It's releasing December 4th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam. I don't believe there's a price point for it yet, but we'll find out eventually, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. No gears, no glory. Control gigantic robots and duke it out in this 3D mech brawler. Epic battles await in local and online versus mode, 4-player co-op where each player controls one part of a mech, and a single player campaign. Each mech has its own playstyle, special moves, and finishers. Royal, what did you think of Mech City Brawl?
Well, it was okay, I guess. Can we move on?
Cool. Next game.
Next game. No. Override's cool. Override was fun, and it was kind of fresh, and it was not something you see a lot of, I think. I mean, yeah, fighting games, okay. Robots, yeah, sure. There's obviously a sense of scale about this game, because the way that it's set up is you fight in cityscapes or other areas, and so you have trees that are at your ankles and skyscrapers aren't quite as tall as you are, and you're just smashing each other to pieces and occasionally picking up weapons as you fight. And it's a blast. It's a lot of fun, and quite a bit challenging too, I think.
Yeah, it definitely has a nice learning curve to it, but once you get the controls figured out, it feels right. It just, having the attacks on the bumpers and the triggers, it just feels right.
Yeah, it took me about an hour to really get that feeling, but once I did, yeah, definitely. Anything that I think the thing that I ran into the most was feeling like I didn't have quite the response time I was hoping to get out of the play control. Mm-hmm. But you also got to consider you're probably controlling, 100-foot-tall robot, and maybe they're trying to go for that sensation.
It takes a wind up to get your arm moving or your leg moving.
Exactly, yes. And, you know, you hold down a punch or a kick, and you got like a trigger for your left and right kick and a bumper for left and right punch. You hold down the button for a while, and you kind of charge it up, and then you just freaking wallop them, and you can see them hit the deck, and it looks like it hurts. I mean, it's a very good kinetic game, you know, very alive with just seeing folks go flying. Picking up weapons and blasting. Some of the weapons are just truly devastating. Some of them are kind of humorous. I think your favorite was the sickle that I saw you just tear me to pieces with.
Oh yeah, that and the lightsaber was pretty cool too. Or the glowing saber of beam.
Yes.
Probably can't call it a lightsaber.
Yeah, it's a beam sword. It's not a lightsaber.
Beam sword. There we go. A red glowing beam sword.
Don't sue us, Disney.
We should probably say we played a closed beta of this that happened this past weekend. It was limited in content. There was no single player campaign to it, so we can't talk about that. And I didn't see the 4-player co-op where each player controls part of a mech. Even still, I have no clue how the hell that's going to work.
Well, yeah, so it's broken down with one player is the legs, so there's your mobility and your kicks, I assume. One player does one arm, one player does the other, and then one does the torso. And I'm trying to figure out what the hell the torso does then, if that requires a dedicated player. I was picturing it as like one per appendage or something, which would be hilarious to play.
have the legs yeah, kicking at the same time.
One for each leg would be awesome. You know, in a sense, I started to picture something kind of like Gang Beasts, but without the, you know, the like floppy gelatinous clinging onto everything play control, but just still feeling like, ah, I can't work this thing, you know. I think that would just be tremendous. And some of the characters also have a good sense of humor about them too. So, you know, you put those two together, it'd be awesome. I didn't much care for using him, but I think one of my favorites was Pescado, which is like luchador, you know, a Mexican wrestler with the fish head.
Oh god, that one, yeah.
That one was bizarre. I was no good with him, but it was hilarious to control him. And picturing like 4 players trying to work that, I don't know, I would just be having a gas at that. I think that's awesome.
There are some cool characters in the game. For the life of me, I can't remember any of the names except for Vintage.
Vintage is probably the best one because of that, though. He's not only memorable, he's hilarious, and for an old school gamer, he's just like the perfect fit. You know, his special move, that just cracked me up so much.
I wish I could remember the name of the one that I played as quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, that is, I think if I'm struggling for complaints about the game, one of them would have to be that very few of the characters have very memorable names. Some of them are just unusual and a little immemorable to me. I know that there's the one that has like Gecko in its name or something, and looks like a big dinosaur type, and wields a sword. And you got another one that has the bow, but yeah,
one was named like Maya.
Maya. Okay, there's one. Yeah,
I can't remember any of the names. That really is Crystal. One of the negatives I have is that the characters, for the most part, because the character select screen is basically just little mini portraits. It doesn't have their names below it. They just feel like they don't feel memorable right now. Hopefully that changes as we play it more.
Right, and if I'm not mistaken, there really isn't like an announcer or narrator of any kind. And if they do bring one in, I think having like that sort of vocal reinforcement will help you remember the names better too.
Which, by the way, the balance modus. If you guys are looking for an announcer for the game, Vintage Maya, round one, fight. Oh, wait, there are no rounds.
Japan.
Norway.
I'd say Brazil. That's still my favorite out of all the Street Fighter ones. But I don't think there was a Brazil in there.
No. So. I did want to say, I know on... We played together on the PC version, and they had 4 stages available.
Yes.
I also dabbled a bit with it on the Xbox One. They had a beta on there as well. And they only had 3 stages there, but one of them was different than what was on PC. There was a lunar base on there. That one was pretty cool as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, lunar base.
We also had Morocco and Egypt, and in addition to Norway and Japan, right? I think those were the 4 we had. Yeah. I think the only other criticism I can really levy as we're talking about level design is I felt like the buildings just kind of melt away as you go through some of them. And so I didn't feel like there was a, you know, sort of a crunch or anything. Things, you lay waste to the city, no doubt.
But you walk into it, it just falls apart. There's no method to the madness.
Yeah, you just cut through it like hot butter. And it'd be really cool if instead there was some sort of, you know, bounce back damage as you get thrown into the building. That's got to hurt just a little bit more, you know? Something like that would have been cool.
I would also like to see more variety in the levels. I think the best stage in the beta was Egypt. It felt like the most fleshed out. It had multiple tiers to it. It had hidden pathways that you could go through. It just felt like the biggest, most sprawling stage, where something like Japan is basically just a square of buildings.
Yes, that is correct. I'd have to agree with you. I think Egypt was definitely the most fun and had, you know, not only good variety in terrain and elevation, how you could go down below and up above. Also did have a couple big obstacles that you could hide behind if somebody, you know, brings up a projectile weapon or a gun, you have something to hide behind. You know, which some of the levels simply don't have. If they're just a simple wide flat arena like Japan, there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, nothing to dodge behind.
Yeah, Lunar Base had some nice elements there as well that were indestructible that you could hide behind and kind of kite your opponent around. But for the most part, the stages felt, I don't know, kind of empty. I would like to see more there. By the way, your kids are having a blast in the background.
It's good to know they're having fun. they also got to play a little bit of this too, and I thought that was kind of
neat. Did your daughter kicked my ass, by the way.
That's my girl.
That was awesome. Like I started off like, oh, I'm gonna let her get a couple hits on me and then I'll fight back, and then she just started whipping the shit out of me.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I don't think I'm gonna win this even if I try. And I did try, and I still got my ass beat by your daughter.
That was fun. That was fun to watch.
The game in general was fun to watch. It was just really enjoyable to play. It was bright. It was colorful. The finisher moves were all ridiculously over the top. I think this is a game to really keep our eyes on. I had a lot of fun with it.
I would agree, and I can see this really being. I'm really eager to see the four players each playing one part of a mech. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And there's supposed to be a local versus mode, but I have a feeling the online versus mode would be probably more fulfilling having a single screen. But yeah, I completely agree. I think this is definitely one to keep your eyes on.
I'm glad you brought up the local and multiplayer, or the online multiplayer. I did notice a glitch. I tested out the local mode on my PC where I had my controller and then I just hit enter on my keyboard just to get a local match going. The second player health bar never showed up. I didn't see it.
Oh, weird. That's odd.
Yeah, like the single player or the first players was up in the corner where you would expect it. The second players just wasn't there on local versus mode. So I don't know if that's a glitch. I don't know if it was just something funky on my end, because it's well known on this show that my PC sucks. So could very possibly be something on my end.
Yeah. But it's like a vertical split screen, right? Two player.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on for sure.
Overall though, your final thoughts on this one?
Yeah. I'm all about it. I wanna see this when it gets released in December. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I agree. Absolutely agree. Next game to talk about, though, is called This is the Police 2, developed by Weepy Studio, published by THQ Nordic, released August 2nd on Steam for $14.99, coming to console September 25th. Welcome to Sharpwood, a remote border town in the north. It's a rough, cold place where inhabitants know their neighbors by name and faithfully keep to their traditions, no matter how barbaric those traditions might be. Royal, this sounds incredibly different from mech robots fighting.
it's almost the same. I mean, you just change out the robots for sheriff's deputies and you pretty much... No, it is very different. No,
had me for a second. I was confused.
Yeah, no, it's nothing like this, obviously. And you know what? Actually, I gotta admit, it was kind of a surprise to me, because to look at the trailer, I originally was expecting something more like an XCOM style turn-based tactical strategy game. And that's really only a fairly disappointingly small part of what's a much bigger and more varied game than that. Hmm. Yeah, this is the Police 2 is one of those ones that kind of evades pigeonholes. And so it is sometimes a management sim, which seems to be where This Is the Police, the original, mostly was categorized within. And I didn't play it. I had to do a little research to find out more about it. It's also going to have a bit of visual novel to it. There's a lot of dialogue, a lot of cutscenes and cinematics, and I kind of want to go over that piece a little bit in a moment. There's also a unique thing where you kind of have to storyboard the events that you surmise happen in an investigation, try to find an appropriate suspect. Somebody to indict, somebody to accuse. And on top of that, you also have this like isometric turn-based XCOM style tactical assault stuff that happens occasionally. Hmm. And yeah, when you watch the trailer, I kind of pictured that was a bigger part of the game. And it was actually the least common thing you get to do in the game, even though it's the first thing you get to do in the game too. So I don't want to say I felt deceived. If I had played the first one, I wouldn't have, because it sounds like the first one was almost entirely like management sim and more of that visual novel type stuff.
Yeah.
From what I read. So all that aside, This Is the Police 2 is it's a mixed bag. I got to be honest. It's both good and bad.
Well, let's start with the good. What did you enjoy with it?
Yeah, let's emphasize the good. So it has a fairly talented roster of voice actors, including the original Duke Nukem, nice. Which I thought was cool. Took me a moment to
John
recognize
St. John.
Him. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it took me a moment to recognize him because he doesn't go over the top at all. But it's definitely him.
And he doesn't talk about balls.
You know what?
He or might. Maybe he does. I haven't remember played now. It.
Yeah, he might. He's definitely a tough guy. He actually kind of channels his Jonathan Banks. He kind of reminds me of Mike from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, the way he deals with some of his problems. Mm. He's a hard case. And the game visually reminds me a lot of Out of This World in Flashback. And that's taken way back, but that like really empty planes and polygons, rotoscoped animation, quasi motion captured look, where you do these cutscenes, and the cutscenes might not even bother drawing much of a face on the characters, but you can see them moving like they're captured on camera with a low polygon count. So kind of a weird, rough but smooth, very older style animation. I think my biggest complaint with that is that it wasn't more consistent, but it does have a nice and unique appeal to it. You also have, I think, in my experience, a really good soundtrack. A lot of like hard bop and post bop jazz, but not too far out there. It's very listenable. Doesn't really seem to quite fit with the more rural setting of the game. It would seem more likely to fit in a more urban setting, because Sharpwood, it's almost like Fargo. I mean, you're out in the sticks. Mm-hmm. It's always snowing, stuff like that. But great sound, great music, as far as I was concerned. And the tactical scenes especially are very enjoyable. And very hard. I really wanted to give up on the game until I got into one of those, and then I started to really feel like the game had its pace. It started to become a lot more fun, and I have to say it's a positive to an extent. The challenge is definitely there, and part of that the appeal of that challenge is you screw up these tactical missions and you want to do them again. You just want to keep trying until you get it right. I think that's a sign of a good game, you know, just to be blunt. If you feel like you want to do it again and you don't feel like it's a chore, you know, you got to be enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
So there is a lot to like about This Is the Police 2.
Yeah. What about the negatives? Because I know you said it was a mix of good and bad. What negatives did you have with it?
Yeah. So it's a little pedantic, but I feel like there are a lot of factual errors and problems with police procedure in it that really bother me. And part of it for me is that there's even just like a confusion between what's a sheriff's deputy versus what's a police officer. Like I said, pedantic, but it means something to me because, you know, I have a family with a law enforcement background. So to hear him, you know, just kind of colloquially referred to as police just seems weird to me. And there's also just this pervasive disrespect for the acting sheriff throughout the whole thing. And I don't know if this is necessarily a negative as on the game itself, but it's kind of frustrating because it something about it just doesn't sit right with me that you play this character that, or rather you sort of manage the sheriff's office as this character that's not even really legally allowed to help run it, but very qualified to run it. I don't want to spoil what happens, but basically you're called in to replace this sheriff that's just not really liked or trusted or respected as an authority by her own staff. And to that end, the staff, like the actual sheriff's deputies, they're very unprofessional, a lot of them. So as part of the management piece, you're dealing with ones that are always calling off. They're always doing something else. There's one who's in this constant struggle to get his band together. He doesn't show up until like several days in the game, and he totally sucks once you get him too. So it's you end up with this scarcity of actual working officers. And when you go to put them on the job, when you go to assign them to a call, you'll find that often they don't want to work with each other. They'll say something like, "Oh, we just want to play cards." What? You know, if that's how it's going to operate, I mean, what hope have you? You're always trying to recruit new folks, and it's very easy to lose them. If they get shot and injured, they're going to be out for 6 days, and you play the game one calendar day at a time. So, you know, you pretty much want to do those tactical missions, as few as they are, as flawlessly as possible, so you don't lose your available staff. And if you screw up one call, you lose points that are measured in like beer tabs that would otherwise be earned by all the good calls you resolve. And sometimes it can be very punishing. So you might end a day with almost no new resources. It kind of reminds me of the scoring system in Papers, Please. You know, you can get enough attaboys to almost make it, and then you have one screw up that costs you a lot. You know, as you get better and if you rise to the challenge and you build up your staff correctly, you try to, focus on playing the long game with them, and you're willing to accept that occasionally a day is not perfect. I can see it being very rewarding, but, I poking through some of the other reviews I've seen out there, I have to agree to some extent that it can be very challenging, especially as you're going through November. It starts, you know, pretty close to Thanksgiving, mid to late November, and, you know, goes day by day. When you first start out, you're like, okay, so I've got a total of 12 deputies, and I can only use five or six at a time because most of them will refuse to work 2 days in a row, or they become too exhausted that they make an error or they die in a car crash. It's almost absurdly high, that sort of challenge and inconvenience. You think, what kind of sheriff's department is this? You know? Like, how can they do this? How can they actually operate when half of them are calling in sick or they're too drunk to work? Wow. I hope that's not reality. but it is. It does make for a sometimes frustrating game, and it can feel a little bit too much sometimes. Plus, goofy stuff like, "Hey, we found this corpse in the backyard. What do you want us to do, boss?" Well, get him out of there. What else would you do? I think there's an option to just ignore this corpse in a snowdrift. I'm like, no, you wouldn't ignore the corpse in a snowdrift. What do you take me for? And here's the part where I went, oh, come on. After you dig out the corpse, like, well, he didn't have anything on him, no ID, but he had some nice boots. You get to take the boots in your inventory.
Oh, Jesus. So there's the video game aspects to it.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, maybe I'm being too hard on it, but yeah, it's definitely, there's going to be some suspension of disbelief involved in playing this game, for sure.
So this is kind of the police.
This is kind of the police too. Yes, I think that's a fair assessment. but you know, as you build it, well, okay, I gotta tack on one other concern about the challenge I have to mention. If your officers are not loyal to you, and you put them out on a tactical mission, they will be AI controlled and do whatever the hell they want.
Oh, man.
And they will fuck you. They will completely ruin it for you because they just go in guns blazing like cowboys and get you killed. no good.
Jeez.
Yeah, so you got to make sure you also work on their loyalty. And sometimes that means you be as accommodating as possible to them, and eventually they'll come around and they'll tell you, hey, this person's loyal to you. And you can invest in building up their stats. They have like strength and speed, stealth, intelligence, negotiation, all of these different stats that help them on certain calls or give them certain perks they can use in the tactical scenarios. You can build up these characters, but if you build up one that's disloyal to you, you're wasting your time. And I learned that a little too late. So thankfully, you can go back on the calendar and replay from an earlier date, but it wipes out your progress forward. So the save system also makes things, you know, a little harder than they otherwise might be for you. So it's a game that definitely rewards the patient is the most positive spin I can put on that.
Gotcha. So highs and lows, overall $15 on this one. What do you think?
I think for $15, you're getting a lot of game. You have to accept that the challenge level is a little high and maybe frustratingly so. And, you know, I personally think it's a pretty good game. I'm not a fan of the dialogue. It's like great voice actors, ho-hum writing. You know, it's peaks and valleys. So it's definitely a try it in my book. If it were more than $15, it would be a harder sell. But at $15, I think that's a really good price for the amount of gameplay you're going to get.
Awesome. Sounds good. One more game with you to talk about. I'm excited about this one. You previewed it a while back. We're going for the full review now. Puss, developed and published by Team Coil, released August 2nd on Steam for $9.99. In this game, you play as a cat that is trapped in another dimension. Find the way out or stay there forever. Royal, tell us the continuing adventures of Puss.
Wow. This game is awesome.
The fact that we're not even starting with the review yet and you're cracking up has me so excited for this one.
You have to play it. You have to play it. Okay. So, Puss, because it has an exclamation point, you got to put some emphasis on it.
Emphasis on it.
Is like this, I think I described it this way before, still true. It's like a feline vaporwave fever dream. You, it comes with an intro video now, and the intro video shows this TV that's glitching the hell out and like pizza and beer that's been consumed, and it's a dark apartment or something with the TV being the only source of illumination. There's a cat looking at it. And I think the TV says help, and you get sucked in the television or something like Poltergeist. I don't know exactly what happens, but it's psychedelic. And you end up in everything looks really glitchy and vaporwavy and neon. The music is kind of like that too, with weird back masking, lots of static. And you just have to – it's an avoid 'em up as the creator built it. You have to drag this little cat avatar through kind of a can't touch the sides operation kind of maze. And it gets increasingly more complicated as you go on. The mazes get more difficult. And there's kind of a roguelite element to it because no two plays ever seem to be the same. You start out in what it calls World 1-1. And it's I want to say it's like 8 or 9 of these levels that are different every time you play. I mean, if you start again, the next level is going to be probably something different than the one you did last time. And I've seen a few repeats. I've certainly had a few repeats as I play, but there are just as many surprises waiting for you. And some of the surprises are just hella creepy too. There's one that looks like a cat pulling open the gates of hell, and all the screaming as you try to dodge these bullets. It's like bullet hell in a can't touch the sides maze. I mean, super, super weird and hard. Very hard. The challenge on this is just through the roof. I mean, and it may just be that I'm old and I'm lousy at these kinds of games now, but dude, you will spend a long time learning how to play this well. I was laughing like a maniac at half of it. I don't want to spoil it, but when you get through World 1-1 or through most of it, you come across, what looks, and they allude to this as you're even looking at the copy and you're looking at the congratulations screen, tallies your points based on how well you did, how fast you went through, and you get extra lives every so many points. There's a little picture of your cat sitting in what looks like a pentagram and surrounded by candles or something. Well, as you get to this last level of World 1-1 or whatever it is, World 1-9, I don't remember, you actually come across this like, circle of cats and some dark ritual, and they summon Cerberus. And
Jesus.
Yeah, Cerberus is, so when you think Cerberus, Hellhound, you think, you know, big scary dog. Well, it's a Chihuahua. But this Chihuahua this Chihuahua is a mean motor scooter. I mean, fuck you up bad. You start out with 10 lives, I think, or 9 lives. So 9 lives makes sense, so it must be 9. And I mean, I burned through most of them when I finally did beat him. It took me probably 3 or 4 tries. And just while you, I don't want to spoil any further. I don't want to spoil any further as far as that boss fight goes. It's hilarious. And once you finish the boss, then it saves your progress at that point and actually puts you in this sort of like hub and spokes type thing where you get to pick which one of the, I think, 5 worlds, the 5 points of the earth, you know, the pentagram, that you want to go to. And there's this elder cat that's advising you. You go through each one and it's a different set of levels. But again, that roguelite element applies. It's going to load a different level each time you go through and play. And sometimes if you get stuck, he'll show up and say, well, I'll let you pass this if you're willing to give up one life. Which, if you've already spent 4 or 5, maybe that's worth it. I don't know. I said no because I'm stubborn. got my ass handed to me eventually, but it is a hard game. But it's a very manic experience. And the fact that as you start to go out of bounds, it'll glitch on you really badly means that it's how can I put it? It's kind of like watching The Ring, like the American version of The Ring. And things just kind of go gunny sack on you pretty severely.
Daddy, I need to tell you something.
Oh, what do you need to tell me, buddy?
I've been rude to my sister, but now I'm being nice.
Now you're being nice? Does she think you're still being rude?
But,
well, are you being rude?
Well, when I was in there.
Okay, well, why don't you go apologize for being rude earlier? Make nice, okay? All right.
I did already.
Well, okay, maybe do it again. Sorry costs nothing, okay, bud? Okay. Well, where were we?
That's a good lesson to learn. Sorry costs nothing. I like that.
That's right. You put your pride away and you can apologize.
It feels like an aside like that would feel at home in Puss.
this game, yeah. It's an experience. I cannot commend it enough. It is very hard. If you want a game to cruise through, this is not for you. If you want an experience, it is. Oh my God, it is. However, and I'm not fucking around here. If you have photosensitive epilepsy, or you are fit, you have the potential for photosensitivity to seizures or anything like that, do not play this game. Avoid it. Don't even watch a trailer for it. It is just malicious in that sense. I'm thankfully very blessed that that's not an affliction of mine. But I can see how it would be really horrifying for somebody who does have that. So gotcha. That's like the one thing I can say about this game that sucks. And that just means, unfortunately, that some folks aren't going to be able to play it.
Well, for the general audience, $10 on it. What do you think?
Dude, 10 bucks. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say if you want to stream it or play it with friends or something, you know, locally or otherwise, it is an experience. It is also a mouse only game. Ironic, use a mouse to drag the cat. But I don't think there's a way to hook up a controller, and if you could, it would make it probably too easy because you'd be able to walk very straight lines. And the idea is sometimes to not touch the sides of this maze or dodge obstacles, right? So the mouse is more intuitive and more challenging, as weird as that sounds. So yeah, for 10 bucks, oh yeah, no, I can't recommend it highly enough. I think that's a fair price considering how hard the game is, how wonderful the game is. It's one of the most unique things I've played in a long time, and it's so much fun. So hilarious. And if you happen to like vaporwave music, there's something in there for you too.
Awesome. Sounds good. I don't play many Steam games, but I might have to give this one a go.
And you know, it's not very demanding. So yeah, if your computer, you know, is a little under par, it's very playable still.
Awesome. That is very good to hear because, as noted earlier, my computer is balls. Royal, it is always good having you on. Let's hope that you come back sooner than you did last time with your whole vacation and running away from me.
Running away from you.
Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Shit cop. It'll make sense. Somebody I should play this police to, or just watch the trailer.
All right, moving on. Next person joining the show, as usual, Pernell Vaughn. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm dealing with a lot of rainy weather, and you're here, so we might as well talk weather, huh?
That is true, especially because I'm dealing with the same. I'm going to wager that it hasn't hit you yet, but it's coming, and it's going to be bad.
Oh, God, is there more coming?
Yeah, that's what I thought we were talking about earlier. It's going to rain tonight, too. So,
oh, shit, I'm pulling up the weather map.
For those not familiar with our region, we've been dealing with legit flooding, like areas where roads can be confused for rivers, and you would not be too far off the mark. Runs become rivers, and rivers become raging rivers. Not much of an upgrade from a river, huh? Canal, something. Anyway, point is, water's coming down. It has to go somewhere, and we got nowhere for it. So it's just rising up to conquer mankind, and no one's a fan of it. I was thinking about it earlier, how interesting it would be if there was a way for us to somehow funnel this rain to California to handle their wildfires. And then a friend of mine made a joke. He's like, we can't even manage to get oil across two states without a leak happening every few months.
And yeah, I said, for real.
But I said, but the sad part is two things. One, I'd rather have a water spill than an oil spill when you factor in the idea of what a spill entails. Second of all, given the nature of what would be accomplished by, you know, transporting this water, it's funny, you know, how people are, there are certain organizations that are like adamant about, we got to get this oil pipeline running. We got to get the pipeline running. Meanwhile, the idea of transporting water to people who need it, that's a fairy tale. No one needs to transport water to desert, to Phoenix, Arizona. Who needs that shit? Wildfires could be taken care of with extra water. Nobody needs that. No one cares. Now, oil, baby. Yeah. And it's just annoying.
Yeah.
But dims the gums.
Yeah, weather's getting crazy. We're having flooding up in my area as well. I'm actually wondering if my wife is going to be home in the morning because she works at a hospital. And almost all of the roads going to the hospital have been closed.
Oh, your flooding is heavy then, huh?
Oh, like, yeah. We're getting some bad stuff up here.
Mm. I always figured you guys were like up high and on a watershed, so I figured it was all running down for you.
Oh, I live right along the Susquehanna River.
Oh,
yeah.
I had it wrong. I thought you were up in the mountains somewhere, or not in the mountains, but like high enough up that water would flow down to the Susquehanna, not be next to the Susquehanna.
Yeah, we're right next to it. Luckily, our place is elevated enough that if our home starts flooding, you better call Noah to bring his ark because shit's gone bad.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm hoping for too. But we'll see how it goes. For now, all I know is I'm starting to rethink that flood insurance bit. I was like, no, we'll never need that. Who needs flood insurance? We've never experienced flooding here. And all of a sudden, weather the likes of which you've never seen. Global warming is a myth.
Yeah, shit's crazy.
It really freaking is. It's annoying. But hopefully it dies down soon enough.
Hopefully it flies away soon.
It needs to. You're segueing, aren't you?
I'm trying. I'm trying hard.
I hope it flies away with a heart of air.
Flies away. Flies away on a heart of air on tails of broken wings.
Tails of broken wings.
We should probably talk games, shouldn't we?
We probably should. Plenty of which, none of our games involve water.
No, none of them. Well, there's some water in Crusher Enemies.
I guess so, but not a lot.
Yeah, it's not like Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker or anything.
Unless.
Maybe we'll find out.
Secret state.
Anyway, first game that we're going to talk about is called Earhart Tales of Broken Wings, developed and published by Blind Flug Studios, which is an incredible name. Released July 24th on Steam for $14.99, PS4 for $17.99, Coming out this week as well on Xbox One, Earhart is a diesel punk airplane action roguelike game where every colorful level is built on top of the previous one all the way up to the stratosphere. Welcome to Granaria, a flying city in the clouds. Meet Amelia, a young pilot and fisherwoman wishing to reach the abundant world's edge. Pernell, tell us about this one.
Well, Earhart is an interesting little title. So it is a flying roguelike. And what that entails is, well, flying twin stick roguelike. So as you start the game, your character is hanging out at a garage at the lowest level of this, I don't know, sky column, I guess I'll call it. And as you go outside, the idea is that you are kind of flying around a world, like a sky world, which is composed of, regular air traffic being like civilian flights, police flights or police planes, and pirate planes. So basically you're shooting down pirate planes, trying not to shoot police planes, because if you shoot at them, they will chase after you and try to kill you. And also just avoiding civilian planes, which will draw police if you shoot them as well. What's going on is the overall goal is there are sort of elevators of sorts on each section, which I just call sky columns because I don't know what the technical term is for them in the game. And whenever you fly into one, it sends you to the next level of the sky column. And as you ascend, things get a little rockier. You'll start coming across like pirate sky turrets, which will be shooting bullets at you. You'll be coming across more heavily fortified planes and things of that nature, all of which want to kill you. Eventually, you'll stop pretty much seeing civilian planes entirely, and it's just a madcap nonsense wreckage ball thing. A lot of death will happen to you. A lot of shit going down. And the way you fortify yourself to survive as best as possible is by upgrading your plane to be able to handle more problems. The most traditional way is by going to the shop at your hangar and purchasing equipment. The equipment can be purchased by using money that is found. Let me restart that. You can purchase equipment using money that is acquired by two things. One, by sky fishing, which is actually kind of fun sometimes. Sky fishing being fish flying around in the sky, because this world is inhabited by sky fish. And if you fly over the fish, you collect them, and also you get access to a harpoon, which you can shoot and catch the fish. And then when you grab them, they can't fly away, so you can just kind of swim into them and collect them, because unfortunately you can't retract the harpoon. In addition to that, if you shoot down certain pirate ships, they might leave scrap behind. Scrap can be used to be the other ways of which to get equipment aside from buying it, which is by constructing it. And if you construct stuff, of course, you can sell it. So, like I said, you get scrap from blowing up planes, and you get scrap from occasionally coming across like a crate in the sky that you blow open, or sometimes you might fly through like a tree in sky, because the sky has trees too. You fly through a tree patch, and a health kit or sometimes scrap might fly out, or hidden, scrap cash will show up, and you can collect it too. So the actual crafting system, which is utilized in order to basically make use of all this scrap, is a little bit on the weird side, though. What it is there are multiple categories of which to build, and there's scrap, metal, pyrotechnics, and mechanisms for sure. And what ends up happening is, as you collect the different bits of scrap and all, and you show up at the crafting zone, you can combine different things to get products. But there is no real, listing of how to make basic items. But what the game does do, and let me know if this doesn't sound right or make sense as I describe it, because it's kind of odd. The game, when you go to the crafting bench, will show you a series of blueprints at the bottom of the screen. They are all randomized, and they are all kind of like question marked. Like, they don't say what they are. It's just, here's some stuff. And it'll be a number of circles above each blueprint. What you have to do is select a bunch of different parts and then say craft, which costs you money to try. And if you fail, the game will tick off the ingredients that were correct and incorrect in the ingredient blueprints. So it's almost like trial and error. So let's say, let me give the best way to describe it. Okay, let's say one of the blueprints has five circles above it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That means it requires five resources to construct. You have metal scrap, gunpowder, pipes, and let's say machinery parts. You slap on three machinery parts, two pipes. and you try and it fails. But then you'll get two clean circles, an X, and a clean circle. That indicates that the first two ingredients that you had in your formula were good. The second and the third and the fourth were bad, and the fifth was okay. Which means remove the third and fourth and try something new, and hopefully you'll get it right. If you fail at the crafting, you don't lose the parts that went into it, which is good. But you do lose the money, so that's the bad. But I think I'd rather lose the money if I'm going to lose something than the actual parts for a failed experiment, unless you dance around it a bit. So if you're going to play this, I highly recommend you write down what you craft from the base for the base ingredients and great base blueprints, because it does not keep track of those for you. It does keep track of your final inventions, being like your guns and stuff like that. So let's say you build a machine gun with your scrap. As long as you don't sell that machine gun for money, if you open it up in the invention screen, it will tell you about its stats and describe it, and it'll also tell you what parts were needed to craft it. So you can kind of like make like a second or a third, hopefully, though, from what I gathered. I can't even make multiples. You only have one at a time, which is kind of annoying, but whatever. Because I tried to do that once. I was like, okay, if I harvest a bunch of machine guns, I can sell them. But I only seem to be able to have one at a time or so, which is kind of lame. But maybe they didn't want you to exploit making cheap stuff to constantly sell it, which is kind of dumb because you still could do that by making, selling. But whatever. I digress. So the game itself is actually kind of enjoyable. At first, I was rather bored by it, because when you start the game out, the tutorial pretty much walks you through, here's how to fly the plane, here's how to shoot your gun, catch some fish, use your harpoon to catch fish, and also to pull shields off of certain structures, which you can also do. And I kind of enjoy doing that, to be honest with you. You can also tow planes and shoot at them while you're towing them. It's kind of mean. But once you've done that, the game just kind of dumps you and says, have fun failing or whatever you want to do, and you'll probably not necessarily die, because the game allows you to fly back to home base pretty much whenever you want, which makes it easier for you to not, let yourself get shot down from the sky. So I don't want to say you'll die, but you'll be flying home over and over again a lot, just trying to get your bearings. But then once you eventually just say, screw it, I'm going to explore and just figure it the hell out, you'll just start ascending, because why the hell not, right? And then as you do that, you'll eventually reach a point where you'll probably get to the fourth strategy, the fourth zone. And every four zones, there's a boss. The boss is usually a giant ship that is heavily armed with a lot of sky flunkies, and they all just fly around making your life a pain in the ass. And you will probably get shot down at this point if you don't flee. When you get shot down, actually, let me take that back. If you decide to just run on your own, you just hold down like the down button, you'll basically descend back to your home base. Like, you don't just warp there. Your ship actually will dive down, and you have to dodge islands to not crash into them, because that will take down your hit points and hopefully get to home base. So, and of course, if you're flying on like low health, you're like, I gotta escape, and you start diving down, you have to dodge debris with low health, because if you crash, you will probably start to burn up. And then you might ask yourself, what happens if you run out of hit points entirely? I mean, you're already descending, right? Well, you'll still descend, but you'll pretty much be like a flaming ball descending downward.
You get
very little control. Like, your control is limited compared to if you went down by choice. And you still have to kind of try to land on your home base at the bottom of the sky column. And if you fail, you lose everything you've done.
Man.
You get the default plane from the beginning of the game, and everything's going. But if you do land while you're flying as a falling ball of fire, you'll lose some things. Not a ton of stuff. You'll lose some things, and it's like basically mitigating losses. It's losing everything, losing some things versus losing everything. So basically, play cautious as hell, because you really don't want to start this game over, because that's the one thing about this game that kind of annoyed me, was the fact that I like constructing stuff I don't like really dealing with the crafting. I don't like dealing with the crafting too much. But I like buying parts with my money to build on my ship and stats such as hit points, mass, which is basically like more like how much defense your ship has, agility and speed and like fire rate and stuff like that. I like getting abilities from equipping parts on the plane. You can equip a chassis, an engine, or wings, and also guns, of course. I like doing all that stuff, but the buildup is kind of slow. I mean, catching fish, shooting down planes that, may be annoying at first, but then you'll start getting to the cool stuff. But then once you get to the cool stuff, and you die and lose everything, you really don't want to deal with all the small fry, small time buildup to get back to the stuff that was interesting. So it's like, to me, the real penalty of dying is starting over from the boredom perspective, not the, like typical roguelikes, you start a game from the beginning, you're like, okay, they usually give you a little something to either speed it up or make it a little more interesting, something that makes it so it just not, it doesn't feel like such a slog to get back to the cool stuff. But in this game, no, it's a slog, and you don't want to get to that point. So never die. Or if you die, make sure you land on that pad because you don't want to deal with it. But as long as you're okay with the potential of loss of all your stuff, and you can get past that middling early game before you start ascending to the columns to all the beautiful locations and the music gets better, because I forgot to mention, because I'm a big music dork, every time you reach a new floor, the music changes a little bit. So you start out and it's just like fall asleep music. This is boring as shit. And then like the third, it's like, okay, here's some music. Now I can get energetic and feel good about myself. And you're playing then. And then if you get to the next section, the music changes entirely. It's like a brand new like tune for the next zone. And it, the next zone, if you go up, it modifies itself a little bit that way too. It's basically, it changes as you get higher and higher. So it's kind of cool to feel like you're being rewarded with better music. Yeah, she just hit the column. So heaven forbid you're back on ground one. It's like, oh, back to sleep. I'm hard with it. Point is, don't die in this game. You really don't want to do that.
Yeah, basically it sounds the longer you play and the further you get in, the better the game is.
Exactly.
Nice. So $15 on Steam, $18 on console. What do you think of it?
I think it's a buy it if you're a fan of roguelikes and twin stick shooters. Like I said, just be ready for the early like slow build. But once you get past that and you're up to like level 4 and 5 and higher, and everything's just kind of just like, it's like tons of ships shooting at you and turrets going bonkers, you'll be like, yeah, this is fun now. Just don't die.
Awesome. Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Crush Your Enemies, developed and published by Vile Monarch, released August 2nd on the Switch for $8 even. Go back to the awesome glory days of real-time strategy games. Crush Your Enemies has everything you love of the genre. Planning, choosing different types of units, managing resources, taking enemy territory, and outwitting your opponent with the ingenious formations of your men. Pernell, what is Crush Your Enemies?
I'm gonna be blunt, I like the game, but there's nothing ingenious about any of the formations in this game. Nothing. It doesn't mean the game is bad. In fact, I think that's part of the charm for the game. So the idea is that you are a Viking, typically one of many Vikings, depending on the level you're on or the campaign you're on, and your goal is to crush your enemies. How do you do that? Well, I would say that this is done by taking a mob of people. Well, I'll start with the base of the game before I just start rambling. So every stage in this game is pretty much like a, let's just throw a hypothetical, like a 15 by 15 square grid. And within those squares, you can house, there'll be like, you know, terrain, buildings, and soldiers. Soldiers can pretty much fight if soldiers from two different campaigns, just, well, start over, there's two different armies on every stage, you and the enemy, and if your soldiers actually meet in a similar one tile, they will start to fight, and numbers will pretty much just win. Pretty generally, numbers will win out. So the way that you, what you need to do is get your numbers up. More soldiers means more power, and the way you do that is by locating a village on the map, preferably one that you own, and sending some soldiers there. When soldiers are docked in a building, they will procreate. How, I have no idea. They're all barbarians. I guess people live there. I don't, it's a very, don't even explain it. It's just soldiers procreate into immediately, you know, violent battle soldiers. But you basically sit them in the facilities. They generate more soldiers and you can send them out to fight. One thing that's unique about this game compared to a lot of other games of this genre type is the more people you have in a facility, the faster they will generate units. So it is in your best interest to leave a lot of guys in one building in order for them to populate quick or repopulate quickly. And when you do that, you can then take some of them out. You can send them out into the field to pretty much take over other facilities and hopefully kill your other enemy units. And if you can get all their bases down to zero, basically all their unit count to zero, you win the level.
Yay.
Yes! So that is pretty much how the game works. But there are some nuances involved. So like I said earlier, numbers matter, but there are certain situations where you might finally stay at a training facility, which will upgrade your units to different types of units, typically units that have more power. And when you do that, it kind of offsets the numbers game a little bit. So instead of being like 5-5, being like an even match, depending on who started the battle, you can win a 5-7 because your units are stronger than the basic seven guys. They're like basic model units. Yeah. So you can send them to the training camp, but if you send them to train the units back to your normal, you know, repopulation village, nothing, they'll just be turned back into normal soldiers. So you, once you upgrade them, you cannot send them back to copy more guys. You have to run with what you got at that point. So in addition to that, there's different types of terrain. And as your guys run across terrain, they'll either, these things can happen. If it's a default generic terrain that's not owned by anybody, your units will start to kind of dig, I guess is the animation they do, and they basically take over the tile. And once they've conquered the tile, they can move through it fluidly like water. But there's other loans like, you know, poison and whatnot, like swamp line, where if you ride through the swamp, your guys will move slower. And there's other terrain where you ever just can't cross it at all, things like that. So you have to be mindful of how the levels are built up. And then also you might have like different like bastilles where if you camp guys in there, they can shoot arrows down from the heavens to kill other enemy units. But of course, just like the villages, the more guys you have inside the, you know, the bastille, the rampart, the more arrows will fire and the quicker you can kill dudes. It's surprising how I describe this game, 'cause that is genuinely it. It's surprisingly simplistic in a good way. The game is simply boiled down to get guys, turn them into more guys, and stampede over enemies. That is pretty much how the game works. They don't make you overthink. They actually go out of their way to let you know that this game is not meant to be taxing on the mind. All the characters are generally kind of like barbaric. You're basically barbarians fighting prisses. like Frenchmen, like dainty Frenchmen, literally. How that even works and makes any sense, I don't even know what world they could coexist in, but they do.
In this one, I don't think that's historically accurate.
Not even close. Just like procreating and ready for battle, immediate procreation. Such a weird concept. The first time they showed that, I was like, how do they explain this? Why does this in any realm make sense? But that's the game. That's what makes it fun. So the typical 3-star system, because you know every game has one these days. You get 3. There's like every level has different goals. Like it might say crush your enemies, which is pretty much like a complete wipe of the enemy units. Some will tell you to survive a certain amount of time. Some might say to conquer a certain number of facilities, so on and so forth. But every level has 3 goals. And if you knock out all 3 goals, you'll get 3. In this case, not stars, but 3 skewered heads. And skewered heads is the currency used to unlock additional stages. Like one level might require 15 skewered heads. 17 impaled heads. That's the better way to say it. Impaled heads. And then that's pretty much how you unlock new stages. In addition to acquiring these heads, there is also beer that can be acquired. Sometimes you can conquer like cities as opposed to like different bases. And they're like typically side areas you can go to. Like if you have a number of heads, you can just go to the level and it doesn't progress the stage. It's just an extra stage to fight, usually with a harder condition to win. And if you win, that village will start producing beer. And the beer can be used to purchase little side buff items that can be used on different maps to like give you small advantages, like an attack buff or something like that. So it's a pretty cool game. It was one of those games where you recommended it or you said, hey, you want to review this game? I was like, it looks kind of dumb. And it's just kind of fun. I can appreciate it, even with all the crazy rugab dialogue and whatnot. And the fact
I thought the game was hilarious. I love the humor in the game.
Yeah, it's surprisingly funny. Like, I'm not like you're smart barbarian. You crush enemies with brain, not with muscle. And it's like he's calling this barbarian smart, but he's got like red glazed over eyes, and he's walking around with like a beer keg in his arm. And he's like sucking it up through a straw right to his mouth. And this is supposed to be the intelligent barbarian. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's very tongue in cheek. It does not take itself seriously. I will say one thing for sure though. And that is that this game may entice you to want to style it because it has, you can use the buttons to play it, but you're not going to want to do that. I'm just going to tell you right now, you're not going to want to use the buttons. You want to use the stylus. or use your fingers. But what happens is when you select a unit of characters, you can select the number of the unit, or the number of soldiers you want to pull out of the unit to send somewhere. But if you have fingers like mine, you will always fuck that up. You will want to send 20, which is half of your unit troop. You will send all 50, or you will send one of them. And then to correct yourself, you're going to have to take extra steps. But in the process of correcting yourself by taking extra steps, you're going to make more mistakes and thereby create more steps. It may not be as bad as I'm describing, but there were definitely times where I was like, God damn it, come on, not again. Which is why I now own a Nintendo Switch stylus. I bought a stylus because of this damn game. So
I didn't even know they had a stylus for the Switch.
Well, it's not an official stylus, but there are styli, or styluses, I don't know, that are compatible because it's just the type of tech, just the type of screen it uses and the way that the touch screen works. So you can't use, like, say, a 3DS stylus. You can use one of those styluses that have, like, the weird, like, kind of circular padding on the top.
Gotcha.
So you can use, like, certain ones like that. But I now have a stylus for my Switch because of this game. But I like the game.
Nice. So it's goofy. It is simplistic. It requires a stylus if you don't have, well, not requires, but it is helpful with a stylus. And for $8, what do you think?
I think it's easily a buy it, honestly. This is one of those sort of, it's a good time killer of sorts. I feel like the Switch has a lot of those these days where the game is good in the sense that you might want something that's like fun and bursts and you'll enjoy yourself with it. And I feel that way about this. Like, I didn't have to play it, but I wanted to, and I'm enjoying what I play of it. And I would have easily been happy with this purchase if I bought it.
Nice. Good to hear.
I try, you know.
Next game to talk about is called Tetris Escape, developed by ABX Game Studio, published by Rattalaka Games, released August 10th on Xbox One, Switch, Steam, PS4, and Vita for $4.99. Tetris Escape is a platforming puzzle game all about blocks. Purnell. What is Tetris Escape?
It's a puzzle platforming game that's all about blocks. It's done. Yes, I'll go get drunk. Nah, actually, this was the one I was actually really interested in getting when I read about it. It's Tetraminos. It's a puzzle game that isn't falling blocks. What's not to like, right? Well, I'll get into that. Uh-oh. The answer is, nah, I see that's just me being a clown. this game is actually pretty cool. The idea is that you start out on every level is a 2D stage. And the idea is that you are manipulating multiple single square little block men. And the goal is to get them to the portal waiting at the end of the stage. How do you do that? By killing them. Yeah, yes. That was supposed to be the dramatic reveal. You kill them.
Murderer.
What ends up happening with these Tetras is that they actually can transform into Tetraminos. And you can use those Tetraminos to create walkways, bridges, and passages and the like to make a walkway to the eventual gate. Different Tetraminos can transform into one or more different Tetramino shapes. But unfortunately, the black Tetra can't transform into anything. So if you see a black Tetra on the stage, he will likely be the one you get to the gate. The one, that's right, because you can only you can get a level by just getting one to the gate. So you sacrifice your friends so that your one guy can get to the end. And then I guess the game tries to make it all sunshine farty by saying, they all make it. No, they don't. Let's be blunt. If I can't turn them back, I'm going to believe they're not able to turn back. They'll try to tell me just by getting to the gate, they just magically turn back in the walking Tetris. They're dead. They're dead. They died for your cause.
Purnell, you should be happy about one thing.
What's that?
The black one lives.
Oh, you son of a bitch. But you are right. The black one actually lives. Every level with a black Tetra, he is the one that will survive the stage.
He's the hero.
He is the hero of every level. But this game is actually kind of fun. I enjoy it a lot, actually. These are my kind of game in general. So like I said earlier, I was like, I want to review that. I hope we can get that game. And I was not disappointed. I think it's interesting that this game does have the collect three things, just three stars. God damn it. Every game has it. You get three stars, but this game does something a little different that most games don't do. So the three stars are actually hidden on every stage. Or not hidden, but they're in plain sight. So you have to pretty much use your Tetras to turn into Tetraminos to eventually collect all the stars. But once you collect all three stars, a trophy cup will appear somewhere on the stage too. And you don't know where it's going to be. until you actually make it appear for the first time. It always appears in the same spot, but you don't know where it is until you've actually seen it. So you might actually set your Tetris up to actually get all the stars, but then realize that the cup appeared in a place where you blocked it off and you can't get the cup. So you might have to come back to the stage and set the blocks up in a different, less expected way to get all the stars and the cups and escape on one run. I had a great time with it. I played quite a bit of it, and I like the fact that the game starts out fairly simple in that first is just, hey, your Tetris can walk and jump up one block at a time and get them to the gate. And then it becomes your Tetris can become Tetraminos. You can kill them to make it so that the other guys can walk over them. And then they do more like letting you mirror flip them and stuff like that. So they keep opening up more functionality as you play through the game so that you can kind of ease into it. And I would say that the game is fairly easy. Like, if you're terrible at puzzle games, yeah, you're going to be struggling a bit just by virtue of the fact that you're terrible at puzzle games. Get better, fella. But I felt like the puzzles were generally not offensive. It was more like a relaxing solution find, except for the occasional level where you want to get all the stars in the cup, and they made it a little bit irksome. It's like, okay, getting out of the level makes total easy sense. Getting all the stars and then that stupid cup, however, oh man, that's the brute. So, like, the child would say the cups are there for the challenge. If you want to feel challenged, just go for all the cups. Otherwise, it's more like a leisurely stroll, which is not a bad thing. It allows you to choose which kind of place you're shooting for.
Yeah, so for $5, what do you think of it?
Is that all it costs?
Yep, $4.99.
Yeah, that's easily a buy. Shit, I'd buy this for fresher enemies, and I like that too.
That's such a good reaction. That's all it costs? Shit, it's a buy.
Yeah, pretty much. I thought you were going to tell me it was $10.
Nope, $4.99. And if you're on PlayStation, you even get it for PS4 and Vita cross-buy.
There you go. For the price of an extra... For less than the cost of an extra value meal, because shit's expensive nowadays.
It is.
You can get this really cool platform puzzler. And you can eat a cup of fries while you eat it, while you play it.
I'm hungry for fries now.
Me too. Oh, I want McDonald's. Or Checkers, better, more so. I want Checkers.
Oh, man, you're teasing me with Checkers. We don't have them up here.
So good.
Oh, their fries are fucking amazing.
Nice. So you don't have Checkers or Rallies?
Nope.
Ooh, mail order fries.
Maybe.
You know, I mail order boiled peanuts now.
You were telling me about that. Yes. How were they?
They're delicious. They're still good. They come in a can, and you just crack them and boil them.
You were going to send me an Amazon link to them.
Oh, I totally forgot. But I can do that. I will do that.
That's your homework for tonight.
Yeah, that's right. One I'll be happy to do, because you got to eat these boiled peanuts. They're delicious. And it's also frustrating because I always feel like I'm saying boiled penis. And people are like, what are you talking about? I was like, no, boiled peanuts, not boiled penis.
There's a T in there.
There's a definite T in that penis.
Anyway, you got one more game to talk about. That is called Bedlam Ball, developed by, hopefully I get these names right. You said you know the guy, right?
Yep.
Is it Evan Piperl?
Yes, Evan Piperl.
And that's Brianna Livesay?
That's what I would say. I think we're on point here.
Published by Evan Piperl, released April 19th on Steam for $5.99. Bedlam Ball is a goal-scoring game where you change the rules as you play. For now, what is this one?
It's actually kind of nifty. So the idea, and just let me clarify something here. A friend of mine did make this game. But Joe will vouch for the fact that I don't give a shit. If the game is bad, I'll tell him. Your game is crap, buddy. Fix it. Though, of course, I wouldn't say it in such a dickish way. I'd be like, hey, man, I'm sorry I didn't like your game all that much.
Yeah.
But honestly, that doesn't have to happen today because I actually had fun with this game. So it's not a very complicated title. It is basically like air hockey, but you don't have air hockey. It's air hockey, but you don't have to be on one side of the map. You can go all over the map if you want. You're controlling a puck ship, and you're flying it into a space rock and trying to knock it into a goal. That's pretty much the game at base value. But the hook to this game is that you can change the rules on the fly as long as you've accrued enough rule changes. So what so
it's
do I
like
mean
Calvin Ball from Calvin and Hobbes, or you just make up the rules as you go.
You know what? I even think about that, but that's a very good way to put it. Exactly right. That's pretty much what you do. So you'll be playing the game, and you might notice that the guy is kind of being a pain in the butt, annoying you. He's really good with handling the ball. So what you decide to do is, as he's about to approach the ball, you go on, you activate the modification menu, and you decide to minimize, to shrink the ball size down to the size of one or whatever, like the measurement size. And now all of a sudden he flies by and he misses the ball entirely. You can do all sorts of things. Like, let me see. I wrote down stuff like there's modifications to the ball, to players, to the size of the goal, and then there's your special ability. There's 8 characters in the game, but 4 of them are locked at the beginning, and you earn them as you play the game, I think. I don't even know, because I never earned them. We just played 2 players. I don't recall unlocking. I just kept using the same guy, the ghost ship guy, because, God, that character is awesome. But you basically can get – you have 4 guys, and they each have an ability. And then when you play the game, if you stop the game to activate an ability, one of them – or modify the game, one of them is to activate the ability. So, for example, my favorite ability is called ghost ship. And what that does is it allows you to place a ghost version of your ship somewhere around the map. Unfortunately, when you do that, it also gives your opponent one too, but I guess it's just meant to be fair. But when it's done, you are basically controlling 2 ships at once. So you can kind of pass the ball to yourself and then send the ball flying into the goal. Other ones are like Lava Pit, where if you send the ball into it, it'll catch fire. And then if the fiery ball hits the guy, it'll like send them reeling. Also, if the guy flies into the lava pit, he'll also get, you know, slowed down and like hindered movement as a result too. There's wormhole, which will send, you can send the ball into the wormhole and it'll come out the other wormhole on the map because you set them both down. And then there's blocks, which is just setting a block down, which is a deterrent. Probably my least favorite of the abilities because it's so basic compared to the other three. But the ball modification, you can change the size of the ball. You can make the map suddenly wrap around itself. And then you can, like, turn it off when the guy is intending to try to utilize, like, oh, I'm going to send the ball back. Nope, turning it off. And that doesn't work. You can technically, like, multi-ball. And there's, like, player modifications. You can, like, invert their controls. You can alter the friction of the map. And keep in mind, though, I believe that the inversion affects both players. So you can't just be like, well, I'm going to make it so that your controls are inverted. No. You switch it so everyone's controls are inverted, but you're able to handle it because you planned for it. You know, it's like, I'm ready for inverted controls, so let's do this. It's honestly, I think the most fun I had with this game was when I was playing with my friend, and we were intentionally changing the rules as the other player was doing something in anticipation of it so they can screw them up. Like, again, like I said, ball's about to go to wrap the screen. He's ready for it to wrap the screen, so you turn it off. And now they can't, now the ball bounces back to you. Like, now I got a sucker, and you send it to the goal, something like that. It's just the kind of game where, like, I don't foresee you playing it for, like, hours at a time, but I do foresee it being, like, a cool, like, hey, I got some friends over, we're going to activate this thing, and you have a couple matches to goof around and have fun. Or hey, let's decide what game would you want to play next. Let's decide with some Bedlam Bowl. Winner chooses the next game we all play. You know, cool stuff like that. And, another interesting thing that I didn't get to try, but he explained it to me, which I thought was an interesting idea, that you can set up a Twitch channel, and while you're in the Twitch channel, you can actually have the audience activate the rule changes on their behalf.
That is cool as shit.
Like, crap, no, you turn on, I don't want the ball to shrink. Don't shrink the ball. No, friction, put the friction back on. You know, stuff like that. It's honestly pretty cool. Like, I liked the game a lot. It was pretty fun. But I'm, like I said, I don't think it's like hours of, like, you're not going to be playing for like hours at a time, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't designed with that intent in mind either. Now, Obviously, if you had like a huge round robin scenario going on, you could play for hours at a time. But otherwise, I think it's like a good quick pick up and play, toss a ball around and then shrink it, you know, expand the goal size and then shrink it as it's about to go, the ball's about to go inside of it, stuff like that. And just kind of have fun with your friends cursing and laughing at them.
Nice. So $6 on it. What do you think?
I think it's a definite try it with a potential for buy it if you're cool with games. Like I said, if you like air hockey in general, it's definitely a buy it. Otherwise, at least give it a shot because it's one of those games where you don't expect a ton because it's like a, it's not, you know, you go to Steam, it's like all these like crazy trails with like lights and shining shit everywhere. And this game's like, play this game, it's fun. Don't let that fool you. It actually is a game worth checking out. I think if you are willing to play that kind of game, you'll come away pleasantly surprised and you'll be happy that you did. It's a good time.
Awesome. Sounds good.
It is.
Yay. Purnell, it is always good having you on chatting. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Anybody in the Mid-Atlantic or East Coast, watch your shit, because you might wake up to your car floating down the street tomorrow. But be careful. All jokes aside, be mindful. This weather is no fucking joke.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Forsaken Remastered, developed and published by Night Dive Studios, released July 31st on Xbox One for $19.99. An experiment gone wrong has ripped away Earth's atmosphere. The fun begins when you mount your gravity-defying cycle and become one of the rogues seeking a treasure trove of energy sources. You'll need to fight your way past blasting turrets, flying ships, sucking turbine fans, and piercing spikes to prove that you are the best. Checking this one out. Jacob Garner, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing just dealing with the floods up in this area. So
yeah, that's pretty always crazy. Fun. Like between that and Philadelphia, like one of my friends who is a college student, she now works down at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Like, cause that's like where her, I don't want to say internship, cause I know that's not right, but whatever it is for like doctors and stuff. Yeah, like she was walking down her street and there's like 6 inches of rain on like the street that she was on.
Damn.
Yeah, I was like, holy crap. And that's in Philadelphia. Like, I don't know. That was just pretty crazy. So
yeah, they evacuated like the lower half of Bloomsburg already, and a lot of roads are closed. Shit's getting crazy.
Well, I mean, how's it where you are at this point?
Well, thankfully, if we ever have a flood that hits our house, call Noah with his ark, because shit's gone horribly wrong.
Oh, okay. You're on a big hill.
Yeah, we're right next to the river, but we are high, high up.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. So Forsaken, how is it?
Well, it's pretty good. I mean, it's pretty much described as like a first-person shooter, although I don't know. I always found that kind of weird because the idea is that you're in a spaceship, like flying around kind of stuff. I don't know if you remember it, but there was a video game called Descent back in the day, mm-hmm. Which was pretty much like, you know, after like the explosion of the first person shooters, you know, like, you know, Doom, Dark Forces, Marathon, Quake, all that kind of stuff. Descent took it to a different level. And like, so not only could you like move about freely like that, but you could also go up and down because theoretically you're in like zero, you were supposed to be in zero gravity. So there was a couple of clones like that soon after Descent. And Forsaken was apparently one of them. I'd never heard of it, back in the day, but I was also like super addicted to Descent 1 and 2. So I might've just missed it. But anyway, yeah, it's pretty much just, you're moving freely about in your, it's supposed to be like a hover bike, but whatever. Like you might as well just be in a spaceship. Like you can imagine whatever you want it to be. And so like the Earth has become toxic, like this nuclear wasteland, and you have to go through all these different levels. There's 15 of them. You have to move through them, and like you're collecting energy sources and crystals and shields and weapons and stuff like that. And
you're talking, and there's just this epic music building behind you.
My wife is watching Game of Thrones, so that's, you know, it's the most, this is going to be the most epic review of all time on SML podcast. So
as long as there's no sex scenes, I can't have that on audio podcast.
Why not?
Sorry, I'm just I swear it's just getting louder as it goes on.
I don't think so, but
anyway, you were saying.
So like you're flying about trying to collect all this stuff. Meanwhile, like there's all these other raiders who are coming after your stuff, and there's traps that are set, like there's mounted guns that were left behind, and you have to make it to the end of each level. Sometimes it's on a timer, sometimes it's not. Sometimes there's a big bad boss that you have to like shoot a bunch of bullets into until they die. You know, sometimes there's not. But all the levels, like they get progressively harder and harder as you'd expect. And of course there's also 4 different difficulty levels, which I took easy just so I could get a feel for it, because I haven't had to play one of these kind of games since, oh god, it's probably been like 18 years. Wow.
Oh god, we're getting old.
Yeah, we are. I mean, like Descent came out like 96, and I remember, like, you know, like my dad would have to go into like Best Buy or like Staples and stuff like that, and Descent for some reason was always like the demo game. And so I just sit there at like Office Max or whatever and just sit there and play Descent while my dad was like getting office supplies and crap. But yeah, wow, dang, that's been forever. Okay. Yeah, now we all feel
Forsaken originally released in 98, so we are celebrating 20 years of Forsaken.
With wow. This. Yeah, we are old.
Oh, dang. My sciatic is acting up.
Yeah, I need my calcium pills now. So, I don't break my hip when I sneeze again.
Pretty much. Anyway, we are getting sidetracked a lot.
We are really getting sidetracked with this review. Okay, so anyway, so it's the standard stuff. If you've played Descent or any of those other kind of games like it, then Forsaken, you know what you're getting into. Forsaken's pretty much the same exact kind of stuff. The only thing that's really setting it apart is the art style and the goofy introduction video into the world of Forsaken. It just screams late 90s idea of cyberpunk and and sci-fi and all that other kind of stuff. So with that, the gameplay it plays fine. I mean, it's standard stuff. It feels right on the Xbox controller. I really enjoyed that. It does take some time to get used to. But also they didn't release a demo for this, did they?
No. Okay. This is Xbox One, man. Nothing has demos anymore.
Hey, I don't know. I got excited the other day because Mega Man 11 is getting a demo. But, because you keep telling me that nobody does demos anymore. But I still, I still hold out that hope. Because the thing is that, I actually started feeling a little nauseous when I first started it. But that's just because I haven't had to play one of these games for, literally forever. So it's just it's one of those things to keep in mind with this kind of first person shooter. Cause you're not just, you're not just running around on the ground. You can be moving up, down, dodging, doing all sorts of stuff. So, pretty much if you're used to playing airplane games, then whether or not you can handle this kind of game. So it's, the levels are pretty, or I'd say they're fairly linear. And the game does present a nice challenge to it. And I do like the fact that there are four different modes of it. I didn't get to do too much multiplayer because at the time there was nobody online doing multiplayer for the game. So you might want to hope and you're going to have to hope that you have a bunch of friends playing this as well. Cause I can also see the multiplayer for this dying real fast. Because, it is a 20-year-old game. How many people are going to be oh, I should go check this out, as opposed to whatever else is coming out. It looks shiny and new. I don't know how much they actually touched up the graphics, because it still definitely looks like a late 90s, 3D game. But it looks fine. It sounds great. I had a lot of fun with what I played. So... personally, I'd recommend it.
Cool. So $20. What do you think of it?
$20. I'll spring for it. I'd spring for it. Generally, me. I like the $15 price point for most things, but I'd go for $20 for this because it's nice to see these kind of games coming back. It's well done. I didn't experience any glitches while I played. Paying full price encourages Night Dive Studios. Yep. It encourages them to do more projects like this.
Yeah, they've already done the Turok games, now Forsaken. Hopefully we see more come out, because I'm really digging them, seeing these N64 and earlier games just coming back.
I think it would be great to have all these kind of games back again. And it's a definite blast. So, if you can pick it up on sale, great. But for $20, it's definitely worth your money.
Cool. I will have to look into picking it up myself, and maybe we could play online together.
Cool. I'd love to blast your ass out of the sky.
Not the first time I heard that from you. So, Jacob, always decent having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts?
Nah, not this week.
I was waiting for music to pick up again.
Sorry to disappoint.
All right, final game to talk about tonight is called Titan Quest, developed by Iron Lore Entertainment and Black Forest Games, published by THQ Nordic, released July 31st on the Switch for $39.99. The Titans have escaped their eternal prison, wreaking havoc upon the Earth. The gods seek a hero who can turn the tide in an epic struggle that will determine the fate of both men and gods. Are you ready for the quest, and are you ready for a ballin' baseline? Because Norg is here to talk about this one. Norg, how are you doing?
What up?
How you doing, man?
Fabulous! I'm doing good. How are you in your new house?
I'm doing good, man. It's
Mr.
I'm
still new homeowner.
Used to it. Still getting used to it.
It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling. Welcome to adulthood and stuff.
Now I need to get better curtains so that the neighbors can't see me walking around naked all the time.
Oh my goodness, you absolutely have to get into the curtains. The decor, it makes or breaks the house, the feng shui and everything that goes along with it. Seriously, you need curtains. Stay the fuck away from the wallpaper. I swear, if I find out that you've done anything with wallpaper, I will just put you over my knee and spank you. Oh my goodness.
George, you're the best to have on. You really are.
Oh, stop it.
You always make me laugh.
That's my mission in life.
You know what your mission this week is, though?
What's that?
Titan Quest.
Titan Quest! Dude, okay. I don't even know where to go with this, because here's a game that I love playing, and I equal parts want to throw my Switch through the nearest window frequently.
Well, let's start at the top. What is Titan Quest?
Titan Quest is Greek Diablo. Okay. For lack of a better description. Basically, it's a hack and slash game that looks an awful lot like a Diablo style game, and it takes place in what appears to be ancient Greece. And you are a character that is going through the world and beating up bad guys and monsters and evil things and interacting with various townspeople throughout different towns throughout this realm. And you go on quests for them, and you do things for them, and you try to make their lives marginally better when they've clearly given up on trying to finish inventing modern civilization, which is something that the Greeks gave us. So even people who invented modern civilization obviously had their own problems, like the monster in the cave that stole their staff and won't return it. Boo-hoo. Or the bridge that crumbled because a monster battalion crushed it under the might of their evilness. Now, I don't remember in reading any of my Greek history books anything about actual monsters in anything. But anyway, it's very obviously a riff on Diablo. You have weapons, you have shields, you have helms, you have leggings, you have body armor, you have a variety of different charm type things that ultimately when combined will give you special powers when you merge them with your equipment. And on top of that, they've expanded a little bit on some of the typical Diablo things. You still have your energy potions, you still have your health potions, you still have the equivalent of the town portal, but in addition to that, you have, like, I guess it's kind of similar to what we would have remembered from the Herodric Cube, where you gather certain items and then you can make uber items out of them. But in this case, you find the recipes out in the wild, and then once you gather and put together the components of each component, you can bring them over to an enchanter person and he will assemble the thing for you and you get some kind of uber item. You have regular items, you have magical items, you have rare items, you have the items that are in the blue color and they're super awesome. And my character's only level 19 right now, so I don't actually know if there were any purple items. I would have loved to see a purple item. I actually... I don't even know if the game continues, because I feel like I've gotten to the last town portal zone, which means I'm getting close to the end of something, either an act or a chapter or I don't know what. And I put a lot of hours into this, and as much as I'm raging about the things that I really didn't like about it, it was a decently fun hack and slash game. So obviously it scratches the Diablo itch. The over-exaggerated Greek voicings are, they make me giggle in a way that nothing else does, with the exception of hanging out with Snapple Man and him doing mimicries of his parents, because I can't even try to do it. There's just a certain ethnicity to what he does. And it's like listening to a bunch of people trying to pretend to be Snapple Man. So that gives me even more giggles. The scenery and the sound effects are moderately well done. The sound effects, especially, I like the bird sounds that they threw into it, and the random times when your character's getting the shit kicked out of you, and the different yells that you make. Some of the more pathetic yells also make me laugh. The music was pretty good when it was present. It was not present often, and it didn't need to be present often. And again, I already talked about the equivalent of what were town portals to any of the visited towns, not just the one. And you don't have to collect like a spell or a scroll in order to do town portal. It's an option that you can pick up. It's an option that you have in your menu. You just hit it. You go back to town. You sell off all the junk that you don't need. Oh, I forgot to include the fact that there's a transport caravan guy who will allow you to keep certain items from town, and they'll follow you from town to town to town, which is nice. So if you find a level 18 item, but you're only level 15, but it's a level 18 item that's blue, and you know it's going to kick an entire ass once you can finally get it, then you're going to hang on to that for a while instead of making it take up inventory space, which is nice.
So just one entire ass or multiple asses?
Well, maybe one entire ass, and then after that, I don't know about that. Another nice thing that I don't miss about this style of game is you don't really have to worry about repairing anything. I never really enjoyed the repair mechanics. I thought it was kind of tedious. I understood that it was a necessary part of it, but I never particularly enjoyed it. And then when you get to stuff like Breath of the Wild, where your items just disintegrate after a while because everything you find on the ground is made by IKEA, just fuck that. So you find a thing, you get to keep the thing, and then when you find something better, you sell the old thing. That's how gaming should be done, fucking damn it. Okay, the bad. There really is not that much variety, ultimately, where monsters are concerned. You have bird-like, crow-like creatures. You have boars. You have, I've recently come across these weird automaton creatures and minotaur, but then there's like these weird goblin looking dudes and kobold looking dudes and rat people, and they just keep recycling the same guys and skeletons and undead creatures. It's not a lot of variety for a game that has the appearance of being as large as it actually is. And then stuff just starts to look the same after a while. They did a relatively decent job of taking some of the sameness and applying things to it that might try to fool you, like, oh, it's the same landscape, but it's foggy. And ooh. Then it, right? And then, oh, it's the same landscape, but it's swampy. Ooh. So, yeah, foggy and swampy, and fuck that. It's just the same stuff over and over again. So it starts to feel samey after a while. The game mechanics, the actual playing around, got to be a little bit frustrating at times. The controls got to be a little bit frustrating, especially when they start assigning spells to the D-pad, but you also need the stick to actually move at the same time. So bouncing back and forth is kind of tedious. Inventory management was just a royal pain because you want to see what things are in your inventory. But when they show you the thing that takes up your inventory, it takes up so much of your inventory's screen that you can't really see what else is in there. And that just looks cluttered and shitty. And going back and forth from item to item was also kind of tedious as well, because it wouldn't go in the direction that you expected it to. And the next thing you know, you're on somewhere else and you're still trying to get to this one fucking ring that you want to sell. And you just can't get to it until you kind of go about it in a roundabout way. They crammed way too much shit into a small space on that screen. I will say that it did look marginally better docked, but I play, and this is me mostly, I play 99.3% of my Switch gaming undocked and in portable, and generally while I'm pooping. So I don't want to have any frustrating experiences while I am pooping. Pooping in itself is already a frustrating experience because I'm an adult and I don't have enough fiber in my diet. So I don't need to add to that problem.
They make gummies for that. You should look into them.
You know, I've tried the gummies, and sometimes the gummies just aren't enough. This is a problem for another discussion for another time. We don't need to get into every aspect of my pooping habits. The mini map is utterly useless undocked. It's so small and you can't see a damn thing. Every once in a while, I think I catch a glimpse of what looks like a dot where there might be a shrine or a rebirth fountain or the last place that I died when my ass got ganked, because instead of attacking the nearest monster, it ran dead smack through all the monsters to some douche nozzle on the other side, and then I got dogpiled. But that was part of the ugly segment. I'll come back to that in a minute. This game is almost as old as a teenager, and just because Skyrim got ported to everything doesn't mean everything has to get ported to everything. I took the liberty of looking up how this game runs and is played on other consoles and like its original releases and everything, and I don't feel like they did anything to improve some of the problematic experiences that people ran into in other systems. So that was a little bit disappointing. And now we get to the ugly. Multiple crashes pissed me the fuck off. The Joy-Cons, and it only does this in this game, and I tested it elsewhere to make sure that it wasn't a problem with my Switch, the Joy-Cons would just randomly take over and suddenly decide to change aim in the middle of combat and go attack something else.
Weird.
When trying to grab items off of the floor, which I did finally figure out that you can hold down the grab button and it'll pull up a menu of all of the things that are at your feet so you can selectively pick which things you want, which is nice. However, when the Joy-Cons have been taken over by the possessed demon that is this game, you can't move the stick up and down. And then you have to go around, move around, reset the sticks somehow. But it only happens in the menu selection. It's not happening when you're actually trying to move around. So something is weird there. Then there are times when it just randomly changes directions and or targets right in the middle of combat or just walking around and not going in the direction that I told it to go. There does not seem to be any normal intelligence as far as what target gets picked when you're in the middle of combat. And then the weird directional thing makes it virtually impossible to do inventory management when it's acting up, or even portal back to towns, because when that's going on, it's just it's cycling through the list of towns. And at one point I played it like roulette and I tried to time it perfectly so I could get to the town that I wanted to go, and I didn't. So there were many moments of fuck this game, but then I hear the Greek Snapple Man voices coming back and I'm like, I wish I could quit you. And so in spite of all that, I'm still playing the fucking game. God damn it.
Damn.
I think that was a roller coaster. It's a love-hate relationship with this game. I love it and I hate it, and I love to hate it, but I'm still going to keep freaking playing the damn game. Ah! I've never been so conflicted in all my life.
Well, then $40 on this, make a verdict. What is your call?
Oh, $40?
Switch tax.
Oh, the Switch tax.
Yeah, pretend it's 30 with the Switch tax.
Even 30. Is there a playable demo?
I have no clue. I don't think so.
Okay.
Most games don't have demos anymore.
Okay. I will say, you should find somebody playing it on YouTube, and that's my version of try it, because I'm guessing you're probably going to like what you see and you're going to want to play it, but then you're going to play it and you're going to be really angry at me for saying you should play it, because it's probably going to crash on you and it's going to take over your controls and it's going to fuck with you and you're going to blame it on me. So,
which is how it should be. We should blame you for everything.
Actually, yeah, we probably should.
Yeah.
So I'm still going to stick with try it. You're going to like it, but it's going to piss you off.
And if you want to save $10, you could always get it on Xbox or PS4 or on PC, where it's probably even cheaper.
Yeah, you can probably get it for like $5 off of Steam, and they'll throw in a Steam link with it or something.
God.
Serious. I bought a game off of Steam for $10 and they threw in the Steam link to go with it.
Really?
That's how desperately they're trying to get rid of inventory.
Let me know when you see that again, because I kind of want one, but I don't want to buy one.
You and I should talk. I'll keep an eye out for it, but I also have an extra one, so we'll figure something out.
Cool. We'll discuss that after the show, because this is the end of the show.
The end!
Are those the final words for the episode?
The end!
Forward, but what? see. So sick of the circle, so sick of centrifugal.
My first year, no strut kid, gut half of my friends suck, and asking out a girl, well, it's your funeral, good luck. I love the sympathy I got for a bummy, the only thing I care about what people think of me, and then you throw on top of that that everybody calls me fat. The only reason that I rap is so someone would give a crap. Thought I discovered a secret, they act like they all like you when you act like a big prick, and I'm the biggest and you know I get loud, choke slam all the little kiddos like the main event of SmackDown. Principal's office was a good friend, acting like they're out to get me even though I wrote my own end. Started maturing, realized what I was doing, got a super nerdy crew and shared the things I was pursuing. When the anger's always brewing, may not know what you are losing. It's okay to be emotional, but take control, you gotta let it go. So wrong, see you tried to hide her name into another damn song. Think of years past, man, she got the best of them. All the ladies that you done curb could make a list of them. About to go golf, feeling so cross. Took all of her stuff, all you took was a loss. Ever since the day she went astray, man, you just said goodbye to sweeter dreams. You feeling like you need to run, she knows all of your sex things. But that's the way that it goes. You wanna float through the breeze, you gotta take you some blows. You gotta stay on your toes, you gotta put up your dukes. Shelter from the truth bombs, but she dropping some nukes. And if you wanna keep up your force field, you won't see the difference from a heartbreak and a good deal. My advice, don't fantasize, allow yourself to be surprised. Be a man in both your eyes, a work of art epitomized. Fight for love like blow for blow and never say I told you so. You gotta let it, gotta let it, gotta let it.
Gotta let it go. go. Then you gotta let it go. Come on. Gotta let it go. Gotta let it go. Up, but it's okay. I'm going back to school. I thought about an MBA. I'm getting married and I love this girl with all my heart. She digs me also and respects my need to do my art. Yeah, we're talking family plans, but it scares me when I think about the changes that demands. No more shows and empty bars. I guess it's time to lead the charge. I'll hit the road, but not that far. It's not the death of MC Lars. I used to be so cocky, posting nerdcore RIP, but now I'm in the Reddit sublet like remember me. We all want our 15 minutes. Had mine in my 20s, but refuse to say I'm finished. And now, I wanna move to Australia. Or maybe Stewart Island if our country ends in failure. Time to put the phone away and step outside and face the day. Cause everything will be okay, we'll sail away like Hemingway. Gotta let it go.